Welcome to Ballsy, the podcast where I interview successful artists and creators on how they got the balls to sell their art and turn their practice into a profitable business. As a former entrepreneur turned artist, I realized that being an artist is basically like running a small startup, and you, the artist, are the CEO. I talk to artists about their businesses, talk real numbers, growth hacks, tools and tricks, and how they were ballsy enough to make that their career. Welcome to Ballsy, for those who have the balls to make art. Today we are very fortunate to have someone who I've wanted to speak to for quite some time, Kalen Daub. I think I pronounced it right. You might know him from social media, where he is quite famous. So Kalen, I'm actually going to give it to you to just describe a little bit about your work and give people your socials so they can see it as they go. I assume 90% of the world has seen it already, but in case they haven't, just to give them a place to find you.
For sure. So yeah, my name is Kalen Schaub. I'm an abstract painter, best known for my performances captured on video, showing my process on social media. My social medias are just my name. So it's C-A-L-E-N-S-C-H-A-U-B. That's on Instagram. That's on TikTok. That's also my website, my.com. So pretty much you can find me there, or on Facebook or YouTube. I'm everywhere. But yeah, I guess I'm best known for these kind of viral videos that really picked up during the pandemic. And I've been doing this for over a decade now, just innovative, different ways of manipulating acrylic paint with various processes, just letting go, and also just a direct connection with my audience and being an advocate for sort of positivity, anti-cyberbullying, and just making the world a more colorful place.
Yeah, I would definitely qualify your work as process art. And you've taken it to a level that I think many people have. Usually when I start, I'm always curious to know what people did before they were an artist. Like, where did that transition occur? And then shortly after that, at what point did you know that you could actually make a living doing it?
Quote Picasso a little bit by saying everyone's born an artist and the difficulty is staying one when one gets older. But I was fortunate as a child because I was diagnosed with dyslexia, and yep. I've been helped like with that. I've got positives and negatives. I might struggle with reading and writing, but I have like skills in the more creative field, and I was recognized by that from my mother. And so I was always in the direction of making art in arts high school. Etobicoke School of the Arts, and I went to Arts University, CAD, Ontario College of Art and Design University. And then I was actually terrified of being a full-time artist and really didn't believe in myself, but I knew that I was in an art bubble and didn't want to see what the real world was like. So I opened a commercial gallery straight out of university after creating my thesis and or completing my thesis. And so it's called Project Gallery. It was me and two other of my friends that became the co-directors of the space. And we ran it for 5 years. It was in Toronto. It was voted by Now Magazine, I think, the best independent gallery in 2015 or something like that. Just really showing all of the sort of contemporaries of my generation, people that I went to school with, giving their first commercial show, selling other people's art. But honestly, I guess I was unhappy ultimately because I'm a creator and I wanted to do my own thing. And as cool as it was to learn the business side of selling art, I needed to make art for myself and sell it. And so I guess the jump off point was when I left the gallery. I left doing the other odd jobs that I would do, teaching art, stuff like that, working at other galleries, and started my full-time art practice, kind of went into debt a little bit, but really just delved into a full-time creation in the studio. And I had a national broadcasting channel, I guess in Canada, they're called C. They're equivalent to United States of ABC. And they did an exclusive behind the scenes and showed my process. And like that video, thanks to the agent that I was working with at the time, connecting me with one of the directors there, it went viral on, it was my first viral video. And so that basically changed everything and was the beginning of my relationship with responding and comments and the birth of basically the fake art movement.
Okay. There's so much to unpack there, but so many interesting things. So you're running a gallery, so you're art adjacent, not art adjacent, in the art business, but literally on the other side. And so you just made the commitment, I'm going to do this full time. Did you know the type of work that you wanted to do? Were you doing that work privately? And then you said, fuck this, I'm going all in, I'm committing. Or did you say, fuck this, I'm going all in, committing, and then let me figure out what that series is going to look like?
I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew that I needed to make art. And I'd already been doing the sort of spin art that I've been known for. that sort of started in university. It was a university course where we do anything you want. And I saw everyone pick up a paintbrush and I was like, hell no, I'm going to take this opportunity to be different. Ran down to the potting department and I got a potter's wheel and started to spin the first canvas. Then later took a bicycle and cannibalized it to make a version of that. And then now I have one that can spin up to canvases up to 20 feet. It's come a long way. It had many iterations, but no, I didn't really fully know what kind of art particularly. I knew it was going to be abstract. I was just fascinated with color, but I had not made the merge of capturing the content and sharing it online. I think that's really where I found my voice and sort of this divergent approach. I've worked with a few galleries and a few agents here and there, but for the most part, I'm independent and I control my own destiny, which I think is special because I think a lot of artists maybe are not stuck with a gallery, but I definitely went a different path capitalizing on social media.
Yeah, that's why I'm super fascinated to talk to you because I think that path is a new path. And I'm really compelled and interested about said path because I've just started the journey that you're on. So I don't understand as much, but I'm hopefully going to learn some. And so I like that you said, just because of a lot of people who watch this are young artists coming up and things like that. And the two things that kind of stuck with me was I went all in and I went into a little bit of debt to do it, but you did it, right? So there's when you start art's a business, right? Sometimes you have to invest some capital in your business. So I appreciate the honesty that you believed in yourself, you believed in something, and then you poured it into what has obviously turned out to be a fantastic choice.
Yeah, and it's something I've had to, thank you. It's definitely that leap of faith and like that follow through. And I've had to renew that sort of contract with myself many times. I've had my hopes and dreams shaken many a time over a decade now of doing this. So the path of growth and career is not linear. Like you take risks, especially if you're plan to or try to be a pioneer, which I don't like to self-reference that term for myself, but whatever. I try to do things for the first time. And by doing that, you naturally stick your neck out. And so I've taken some hits and it hasn't been the first time I've had to go into financial situation, but pulled myself out. But I think that's just the nature of like really building a business and you have to take some risks.
So I'm going to talk a little, I normally don't talk too much about art, but you mentioned the fake art movement. Can you just dive into that a little bit? Because I know you categorize yourself, explain it, and then we'll talk about it for a sec.
Sure. So the fake art movement, I guess it turned into a movement. It started off as like fake art was what people were calling my work. I think out of context, people see it online. They see a little 30-second video or whatever, and they hit up a comment section and they say, 5-year-old could do this. Anyone could do this, your artwork. And so that sort of at the beginning really negatively affected my practice because I took that to heart. I'm like, oh, like maybe I'm not good or whatever. But then I have changed my thinking about it. That negativity has actually got really nothing to do with the person that they're attacking. It's more of a self-projection and they're really just exposing themselves and the difficulty that they're having. Maybe they didn't have a opportunity to go to art school or maybe they haven't been exposed to art or aren't doing exactly what they want to be doing. Maybe they still don't believe in themselves. It's a lot to believe in yourself. And so it could be a projection of their own insecurities, fears, or doubts. And so the fake art movement is like a reclamation of that term and being like, okay, you're going to say that about my work. I'm already going to say that about my own stuff. And also I'm going to respond with not, okay, I'm going to back it up 2 steps. I've got like a 3-step process for responding. So it's either block, ignore, delete, which is a totally valid thing to do if you don't have the energy or like really nasty comments. That there's a reason why there's those tools there. Use them. The second thing is screw the hater, which is a popular one, but that one starts a little bit of a war. And it's good to defend yourself as well. There's something to be said for being like, I'm not standing for this and putting up a defense. But my favorite one and the one that I like to use the most is show love to the hater. And that one is where the empathy and the compassion comes in, where you're thinking like, they're saying this about me, but it's not really about me at all. It's their own thing. And so what I'll do for, if you're not familiar with my work, is I'll take the negative comments, I'll print them out onto canvas, and then I'll swirl some like colors over top of them. I'll keep the person that commented or whatever anonymous, because it's not really about them. I'm taking a stance against negativity in general. And that was the spur of the fake art movement. And I guess a movement means that like more than one person is involved. So I just encourage others to use the hashtag fake art or fake art movement on their own work as a way to be like, if you're creative, we're taking a stand for positivity and we're not letting the trolls dull our rainbow, so to speak.
Yeah, from a guy who blows up balloons for a living. I've got my fair shake of anyone could do that. But ironically, my first viral hit was like a wooden piece that I made. And it was like, you know, glued a bunch of wooden balls together and painted it. And I was amused by the hate, but I take it all. I'm of your ilk, which is, it's not directed at me. It's something else that's forcing that. And so I'm playful with it, if nothing else. But I appreciate it. And I like your angle and the way you take that. What's interesting, though, is you've actually taken it from a certain level, right? Because I know what people say about process, like certain types of process work and that type of stuff. But you've brought it to a scale and a level that's, I'm sure at the beginning you felt like you were outside of the art world. But I think you're now getting it to like that giant scale that kind of brings it back into the art world, if that makes any sense. So that's just like an outside observation.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited about the large scale work. If I could work large all the time, I would. It's like, I started these trapeze paintings where I'm bringing from the ceiling upside down. And
that's awesome.
And these just like huge pieces where there's, I don't think your 5-year-old could do that sort of thing.
That's correct. That is correct. Might try, but so let's go to the nuts and bolts. This is obviously the things that we're interested over here. I'm really interested about the business of your art. I usually try to break it almost down like a balance sheet. So first we start with the revenue side. And so the question I have is, just so the audience knows, what kind of works do you sell? Is it prints? Is it paintings? Is it sculptures? Is it editions? Is it NFTs? Like, what is that mix of product look like for you? What does the mix of art look and feel like?
Literally everything you said and more.
Okay. Okay, so, go give me the whole list.
Yeah, the full list. I've really commodified everything. So I'll take a canvas and I'll put it onto the spinner and I'll do a piece with that. Then that canvas sells. Then I have a trapeze that swings over top that like deploys the paint. And the deployment device, let's call it the cradle, I sell as a piece. The troughs I sell. Then if there's any remaining paint, I pour it onto a sphere or a skull or a heart. And then I sell that. The clothes that I wear get splattered in paint. Not the clothes I'm wearing right now, but most of my clothes are covered in, and I sell the shirts and the jeans and the shoes as well. And then I call it the arena. So there's a 360 degree barrier around the blast radius, the zone where I make all the mess, where the magic happens. And there's canvases lining it. So there's one here, and it captures all the spray. I call it the confetti pop series. Those turn into works. And then there's actually another massive canvas on the floor, which just I'm walking on top of and all the mess and all, it captures all that. And that turns into a piece as well. Then the video, I'd not only use it to put onto social media platforms, try to monetize it if I can. I'm in Canada, so that's a little bit more difficult. But then I also turn those videos into NFTs. Not so much anymore because it's less popular after the crash, but I did do a bunch of NFTs with that or license that content. And then not all the time, but I'll do prints as well. I'll do phone cases. And then I get paid for in-person things as well. If I do, I perform, my work is a performance. And so I perform the arena, or I've started to get into public speaking and I'll be hired to do a keynote speech or something like that.
All right. So you are my dream, by the way. You like look at, you're like a chef that uses every piece of the bird, but doesn't leave anything to waste. And that you literally take the areas that most people would look at and be like, oh, where the spray goes, right? And you say, no, that's not where the spray goes. That's art, right? It's like a modern Jackson Pollock. It's that, it's the force, it's the nature, it's all of those things that kind of tie together and that you leave nothing undone. There's a lot to respect there, that you're able to convert every piece.
It's been something that's been developing over the years because it's not something that I always did, but I think through the comments, because I read the comments and respond to them, a negative comment isn't necessarily, it could be a good question or somebody could say, oh, you're wasting paint. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe this is could be used better. And so now I've turned what used to just be going onto plastic into canvases and then turning those into pieces. And so it's really a dialogue with my audience as well. So some of these ideas, I got to give credit to the haters.
I mean, there's so much to be said for like that, to look at it that way, right? Just to look at those comments and be like, huh, maybe I can turn that into something interesting. And that's awesome. My next question is, how does that break down in terms of what actually sells? Do you sell mostly canvases or does it rotate with time? Do the wall or the floor pieces take off, or is it the bigger ones? I assume you're somewhat prolific, right? I assume you're making a ton of these things.
I'm an advocate for mental health and speak openly about mental health. Sometimes I'm quite prolific. Like today is day 78 of going live every day. I haven't missed a single day. where I go live, I share my process, but I've also not produced for 6 months at a time sometimes, and like took that time for my own mental wellness. So I would say with my work, it lends itself to being created fairly at a decent speed rather than doing something with a brush. So I'm making a lot of these works. And I think what sells, it's less about a particular style or anything like that. It's where my heart is. And I think it's part of it's the connection I have with the artwork and with my audience. And if I'm really excited about it and I'm really passionate about it, then people connect with that. And if I'm a little bit burnt out or not quite connecting and something's off, then I think that it gets translated into the work somehow and people feel that and they're less interested. For better or for worse, it's all this emotional journey and about like human connection.
I have two, just, and sometimes I go on little weird tangents because something like picks up on me. Do you notice, you do live every day. I assume you do that on all the socials. You do it on TikTok and Insta.
TikTok and Instagram.
Yeah. Do you find there's a direct correlation between the work you make on live and those selling, or are those kind of disconnected from one another?
For selling, I don't think that necessarily the works that I do on live are the ones that sell the quickest. They're available for sale, but I think it's more the pieces that I take the time and develop in the studio without the prying eyes of the public just watching. And I just have a little bit more of a peace of mind while I create them. The large one I sold recently with one of my trapeze works, and that's a 10-foot by 10-foot piece. And it took me a lot of setup, how I was going to grab the paint and trapeze from the ceiling and swing and everything. I'm not doing that live. It doesn't lend itself a nice 30-40 minute thing to put on social media. It was a whole project that took me weeks to tool everything all together. So I think, it's not necessarily what the lives do is they really help. And a lot of my business is about working in collaboration with the algorithm. I think a lot of people complain about the algorithm. I've even complained about the algorithm, but it's really something that we've made, and it's made to service the audience, and they want to see the good stuff. And if the stuff's not good, it's not, the algorithm's probably going to reflect that. It's where people blame the algorithm. Oh, the algorithm, I'm shadow banned, or I'm this, or I'm that. And it's not. So by going live every day, working with the platform and saying, hey, this is what it takes. You do have to post like 3-4 times a day and make content specific to each platform and go live quite often. And I'm not doing all of those things, but I'm doing some of those things and try my best. And that, like that strategy of just, I guess it's algorithmic hygiene.
Ooh, another good one. Collaborating with algorithmic hygiene are my two new favorite. I'm stealing both of those.
Fantastic.
You know something, it's funny because I don't think most people think about that in terms of what it takes, like some of the things that it takes to make that go. When did you know that you were like, what you had mentioned at the beginning, there was one TV thing that you did, it was a viral hit. When did you know that you had a viral thing on your hands?
It's been a journey, ups and downs. That was my first time when I first got to see millions of views crank up there and watching it with my mom being like, oh my gosh, look at the views. I'll just mention it now just because it's my all-time highest one. I just posted it 2 weeks ago, but it went to 250 million views.
Oh, stop.
Yeah.
Please tell me you got some ad dollars from that.
Zero, because I'm
Canadian. Oh, there's no ad dollars in Canada?
Not for Instagram and not for TikTok.
Interesting. Yeah, Instagram took it away here. They used to pay a little bit. They took it away. But then TikTok has a thing. If it's over a minute long, they're starting to pay out again.
Okay. This is like 7 seconds.
Okay. Then no. Wow. 250 million views.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot, man.
Yeah. That's what? 20% plus of a billion.
That's a lot.
Like, it's insane. And I think it's influenced my work. I make work with that in mind. And I videotape everything now. And I just share, I have a candid sort of open concept where I just share my thoughts and feelings. And even when it doesn't work out, and a lot of pieces, you'll see me, I paint over a piece like 5, 10, 15 times and it's not working out. I just work through it all. I don't not produce, even if I'm not like feeling it. I continue to produce and show up regardless, because I believe that creativity is spirit or an energy, or it's definitely, I don't know what exactly it is, but it's emotions come and go, and like motivation comes and goes because it's an emotion. But if you just show up as a ritual and you're just creating content, you're creating work, then you have the potential of having something really hit home and go viral or whatever. Viral is just a word for, I don't know, like popular. External motivation, but a lot of people felt it. But you don't need something viral for it to be good. You could do something on your own. It could be amazing. But part of what you do have to do, whether you videotape it or whether you're online or not, is you have to show up. And so I'm just a big advocate for that sort of ritual of we're making art every day, regardless of whether we feel like it or not. And then that way, if the potential of inspiration or that genius or that moment of spark or creativity happens to be there, we're ready to receive it.
Something I say exactly the same thing. I have exactly the same mentality. If I waited to be inspired, I'd still be waiting, right? And to be perfectly honest, half of the things that have turned out to be really successful in my life are mistakes I've made. That like the showing up and doing when you didn't want to, you know, that actually looks cool. Let me go down that road. And so I'm a huge advocate of that school of thought. And it's funny for myself personally, just this year, I decided to do what you said, which is just showing up every day, regardless whether I wanted to or not. I'm filming every day. I'm recording every day. I'm doing it every day. If I'm so tired, I can't do it the last thing before bed, I'm doing it. And this year has been the one year that has completely changed, right? It's that consistency wins, man. Consistency is what gets you over the line, not fucking inspiration. I'm a heartfelt believer of that. So you've become an Instagram celebrity of sorts. And did you do both TikTok and Instagram at the beginning, or did you do one then the other? When did you find one, and which ones went first?
Yeah, it was definitely like Instagram first. It was around before I was on that. Never really hit it off big. I definitely produced some content on there, and also Facebook. I do have 500,000 followers on my Facebook page as well. So I'm on those platforms. But then as soon as TikTok came out, they actually hired me to do my first like 10 pieces of content on there. And one went super viral and they put it up in Times Square and I got to go and check it out on the big like jumbotrons and everything like that. So that was pretty cool. So I think back then it was more like, it still is understood as this sort of dancing app with songs and stuff like that. But like, it's totally transformed and it's still got a long way to go to like it. When TikTok becomes fully mature, but you'll have all sorts of different people are of all sorts of different businesses and niches and subgenres on that platform now. And it's not just about doing dances from Vine. But I think at the beginning, they wanted to get more people on the platform. So they hired me to use, I guess, the hashtag oddly satisfying.
And you started that. Thank you. I'm also oddly satisfying. That's where my videos fit in I go wrinkly to smooth and I'm oddly satisfied. And just so the audience knows, how many followers do you have on each? So people realize how ridiculous this is.
It's 5.5 million on TikTok and 800,000 on Instagram.
Okay, so you have real voice, man. These are not little kid numbers. These are like big grown-up numbers. That obviously that kind of volume, it's obviously attention from brands. It's obviously attention from collabs. It's obviously attention from different things. I would assume there's a correlation to sales as well. I guess my next question, I'm going to squish those together. You have all these works and all these different things, and these all go together. Where do you sell them? Do you sell just on your website? Do you sell in galleries? Do you sell to just on third-party sites, social? How does it all work in your little system?
I'm proud to say that it's all through my own website, and I'm excited for the next stage of that. I've built a VR and XR immersive experience that is connected to the store where you can go through, you can shop and or just experience the work in 3D, which is next level thing that I'm excited about. Yeah, I self-represent. I have done shows in Miami Art Basel. I've worked with galleries for those sort of things or had partners or agents at times. I'm currently 100% independent. I do have a show that's going to come up in New York at Sarabelli Creative at their headquarters, which is like the old Burning Man building where they used. That's a cool spot, and that's going to be a sort of a partnership with them. And I'm just happy to say that I've fought a lot to reserve or maintain my independence. And I know that's not maybe the most attractive thing for my potential to work with because they want exclusivity and stuff like this. But it's something that I really enjoy because I like to say I control my own destiny, and the galleries typically take 50%, and that's a lot. And I get to scale my own. If I feel motivated and I want to be prolific, I can do that. If I want to scale it back and take more time with my family, mental health stuff or whatever, I can do that. I'm not really beholden to like some sort of quota to meet. But yeah, the way that it's structured, it's all based on my performance. And so if I'm making amazing, thought-provoking, exciting, colorful works and people are loving it online, that's going to translate to sales. And if I don't, then I don't have sales. And like, selling original artwork is my main source of income. So it's basically, you can buy a print or whatever, or maybe I get booked for a live performance or talk or whatever the case may be, but it's really the original artworks that are my bread and butter. And I'm happy to say that's how I can support myself, but it's also performance-based, and which is like a lot, it can be intense at times, because if I fall off, it immediately is reflected in like my income. If I don't feel, if I'm not making amazing art and putting it out there, I'm gonna feel it.
So a couple of things. I agree with you 100%. There's a lot to be said for keeping all the money. It changes the economics of the business quite quickly. So your artwork to your performance stuff, it's still predominant. You still make way more money selling art than you do your live stuff.
Yeah. When I do get hired for a performance, it's definitely worth it, worth my time. But the putting my stuff online, it's the frequency that I'm just able to make content and put it out online. And like that consistency, there's no way I could book that many events. So it wouldn't be.
Right. The dollars aren't as much. Just a quick side to the event. Do you bring the whole spinny thing when you do the event?
Yes. I have multiple ones of them. I had one in LA for a while. I have one in New York. I've got one here in Montreal. So yeah. I've got different, like the arena, the whole setup with the trapeze and the spinning apparatus. So there's multiple setups, and I sort of will tour those around.
That was just more curious than anything else, whether you packed it up and brought it with you or you had it staged in places. Now, because you tend to conjure yourself, in terms of representation, do you have an agent or anything like that, like more of the talent agent type thing? Or do you do complete self-representation top to bottom? Or do you negotiate all these deals? Do you, like, who does the negotiation work?
I've got representation in the United States. And so that's with Cerebelli Creative. And that's been awesome working with them. And if I do anything in the States, that's through them. But all my other collaboration, brand collaborations, which is a big part of my work, is something that I manage myself. Currently, I have worked with like subcontractors and agents or managers over the years, and they've all independently have propelled me to different stages of my career, and I've been grateful for all those opportunities. And I've had big teams before too, where I've had 5-6 people working in a boss man, making sure that I'm running my atelier, where people are boxing stuff up, or they're working on the videos and financial stuff or legal stuff or whatever the case might be. And I'm acting as more of a boss, but I found that I don't really enjoy that role. I just want to make art. So I've taken on a lot more of the tasks and jobs like to do myself at the moment, which is good too. It's a good recalibration of making sure that if you want to hire somebody to do something, make sure that you fully understand that before you start. I guess they call it the golden handcuffs, where you think you feel like you don't understand something. And so you have somebody else do it for you because I don't know how that works. You do it. And then they can charge whatever they want because that you don't understand the nuts and bolts of it. So by doing it this way, I'm sort of reacquainting myself with the minutia of all the aspects of the business.
So this is actually a great segue, because obviously it sounds like you've had a very large team at different points. Do you have a team now? Actually, let's go back. You described the biggest team you had, but who are the different, what were those different parts that fit? And do you have a team now, or what members do you have now? Do people box your stuff for you? Do you do it all yourself? Like, I've heard the gamut.
Yeah, no, I've really scaled back. I'm doing all my shipping myself.
Really?
Yeah, but I've had sometimes 2 or 3 people helping. But it's also volume. I was doing a lot during COVID, during my color therapy series. But I bring people in when I need them as per project. And so right now I'm just keeping it more closer to my belt. I do have a video guy that works with me on a consistent basis. I've been with him for many years. And I have some people on my team. Honestly, they're just my friends, and they're happy to help. Friends and family. My mom helps me with a lot of the naming of my works. And I have a friend. She's quite the entrepreneur herself, and she's got a history in psychology. And so she helps me with my sort of... And so before I do anything where I will speak publicly or whatever, I can always touch base with her and have a consultant on the PR side of things. And so I have that at all times. And then, yeah, I've got my booking manager for if I'm ever doing a live in-person sort of thing. But yeah, I guess what I don't have right now would be somebody that's overseeing all of my sort of collaborations and contracts and everything like that. But I've got a great lawyer, and I just work directly with them and write the contracts with my lawyer. So I'm pretty covered that way.
So if you told me you didn't have a content team or someone help you with content, I was going to end the interview right now. for someone who puts out the amount of content that you do and not like someone at least to help with editing.
Yeah, I do have, yeah, but I have help with editing. I don't let a single video go. I post everything that's posted, I post, and there's no, I'm sorry to say, but I don't, it's not scheduled. So I'm working on it every day. And I also do my own, I've edited my own videos for years. And then I recently, over the last past year and a half, 2 years, had a video guy. But it's a collaboration. We still work together on it and I'll redo videos and stuff like that. But yeah, and I'm shooting. Sometimes I'll have a photographer, but I'm still shooting all my own work. Like a lot of this stuff I do myself. I'm videoing the work. I do the videography. I do the photography. I do a lot of video editing. I get help with that. But yeah,
so far,
the social media management, that's all me. And I'm in there. I'm reading comments. I'm responding to DMs. It's full on.
For all the haters out there, man, this is the work, right? Like people think, oh, you just paint pictures, but you're not painting pictures. You're a social media manager. You're a video editor. You're a production guy. You're building machinery to carry you through the air. You're dealing with shipping and inventory. You're dealing with, that's the part that nobody's, that's my question. What percentage do you actually paint versus what percentage do you do everything else?
It's 10% painting.
Yeah. Okay. That's
maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. Maybe it's a little bit more. Maybe I'm painting a little bit more. But I paint every day and I put in, I'm working all day, but sometimes I only paint for an hour or two. And
yeah,
the rest
of
the time I'm in meetings and I'm doing shipping and negotiating new
deals,
collaborations,
right,
and whatever. And even just managing my own studio. It's a big space. There's a lot of things that just moving around. So yeah, no. But thankfully, that's also, I have a way of working that's sympathetic to that model. And I thought it was scalable, but it's not. And I tried to scale it and
what do you mean?
Okay, I'm doing all these things.
Right.
But theoretically, don't you just get everyone else to just do those things? Like, why are you making a box? Why are you editing video? Why are you sitting in on these meetings when you could be painting all that time? And that's potentially more revenue. That's how you make your revenue. Don't you just have everyone else do all those other things? And I tried that because in theory that's a slam dunk, but it didn't work out like that for me. It's part of it. I'm involved in all these processes and I don't want to be a boss. I don't want to just have a meeting with my team and okay, everyone go. And also there's an accountability too, because it's like, if you have a team, you have to be doing that much more revenue in order to pay salaries to support that. And is that the life you want to live? So like you can, on paper, you can make more money and you can have a bigger team and it will look also like you're doing more stuff. It's going to look like success, but success to me is happiness. It's not about these monetary goals. How was your last quarter? Dude, how are you feeling? How are you feeling today? Are you enjoying life or not? I scaled back and if I really want that again, I'll do that. And maybe there'll be a partnership with a manager that has a good relationship with me where we can set aside paint, get me into the studio painting more. But at the moment, I'm just, you know what? I'm going to be real humble about it. I'm going to just do the work myself and I'm okay with that. And it's not very glamorous. I'll tell you that. Like there's another version and another alternate reality where I'm just like crushing it and I have a big team and stuff like that, but whatever. I'm okay to take it all in stride. I think everything happens for a reason. And this is just a little bit of a different pace. That's all right.
Yeah. By the way, the reason I do this podcast is because I like to talk to different artists and every artist has a different journey and a different thing. And some people have big teams. Some people have team. What the fuck's a team? And so, and by the way, some people do what you did. They grew a big business and I don't want to be the boss. I want to do my work, controlling all this and scale. So it's always interesting to watch people's journeys through that. And I think that's because, once again, most of us start because we're artists, right? We start with art, right? And next thing you're a business person. You're like, how the fuck did that happen? And right, so you're like, I came here to make paint pictures and what the fuck is going on? Next thing, I'm negotiating brand deals. And so there's this kind of weird dichotomy of what that success looks like. Everyone dreams of that success. And then when that success comes, and so moving those things back and forth is super interesting. So I'm like taking notes and have 800 questions. So let's talk brand deals for a sec. I assume you get tons of them and tons of collaboration inquiries. What are some of the greatest ones you've done or the ones you're most proud of? And I assume there's a bunch you turn away and tell, don't bother. How do you go about managing and dealing with that and the deliverables and what they want and what you want to give and actually fitting it within your practice?
Oh boy. Yeah, no, I've definitely had a lot of exciting ones and I've had ones that I've had to turn away or I've had ones, the most heart-wrenching ones are the ones where you do the collaboration, but it never sees the light of day. and you've signed an NDA, but for whatever reason, it never gets to see the public eye. So those ones are the worst, because it's like you put your heart into it and it just never got to out of the box. So that happens. But right now, it's been a process of 2 years. I've been working with Fender. I'm doing some five different or like original Stratocasters with like my art on it, and like some rock star is going to choose on that like one day. That's just going to be so awesome. So there's just a tried and true brand, and they make it for artists a totally different field. So it's just like such a compliment that I get to work with Fender, and that's the art guitar, who is like the kind of, they negotiate with the artist and then they talk with the Fender and meet us both. And you know, those will be like debuted for the first time. They were supposed to debut at the NAMM Festival in Anaheim. I guess it was almost 2 years ago now, or a year and a half ago, but it was like COVID and there was all these complications or whatever. We're finally getting these things, and I'm excited for people to see those in person. I've got an exciting, very excited one, that fashion collaboration that's going to be debuting in Paris Fashion Week in 2024 for the men's fashion week. I can't really say more than that.
Right. Of course he is.
Yeah. But as soon as I can, that one's really exciting. What are some other good ones that I've had? I worked with Coca-Cola recently, and it was for a TikTok. So it was a small sort of campaign. They go pretty hard for the holidays, of course. So we did a TikTok for their holiday flavors and stuff like that. That was really fun. It's like a nostalgic piece, reminiscing of that. You put the quarter in and it rolls down. There's all those like little magic inside the vending machine kind of thing. So it was the magic inside campaign. That was really cool. I got to work with Coach last year, which was good, the handbags.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But then other times I've turned down. I had a big project in Dubai. I had another project with Alexander McQueen that I never did. And why I didn't do it was I wasn't there mentally. I just need time for myself. And if you're burnt out, you just have to be honest with yourself. And so it's not worth it sometimes. That was a simple one where I was just, no, I'm taking time off to whatever, meditate, get in peace, spend time with my family. I'm just taking a break from social media. And that was one of those instances. But other than that, I've had like lots of good I used to collaborate more with alcohol brands. I've worked with Bombay Sapphire, which was awesome. Grolsch. Bombay Sapphire was cool. We went all around Canada and did the arena in different cities like Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal. That was special. But I haven't been working with the brands as much because I've taken my brand is a little bit more for everybody now, and the alcohol brands, whatever, yeah. Drinking age and stuff.
So you obviously, the brands will fly you around and you'll go do these kind of shows everywhere. How many of those can you pull off a month? Do you have a limit for yourself? Because I assume they're like I do big installations and I can do one a month because they're physically draining and I can't do anything else because by the time I set up, travel, do the thing, break down the thing, go home. Like, how do you manage that?
Absolutely. Even if you're just showing up for a few hours, everything that goes into it and the management, the amount of meetings that's required.
Yeah. 100 thread emails?
Yeah. I've had quite frankly, since the pandemic, I've had a lot less of the event industry, I don't think has picked up, just at least for me personally, as much as it was before. And also, I just charge more. I used to like just show up. I didn't care. I was like, I want to paint and I'll do it basically for free. That's not the case anymore. And your rule of one a month, I think that's something more manageable for me. Because if I was just showing up with an instrument or something like that, or if I was a DJ, that'd be one thing. But I got paint, I got canvases, I got a mess. Things have to dry flat. It's this whole operation.
Sounds stressful.
But I've had the opportunity to do a few like music festivals and stuff like that. And it's always fun to see the reaction on people's faces. One of the reasons I love it is because it's so awesome to see it come to life before your eyes. And the videos are the next best thing. That's why most people know me, but they see it in person and they really light up. That's really special. So it definitely is worth it in that regard. And then collaborations too. It's not limited to just brands. It's also other artists. That could be really fun and interesting too. I've worked with a bunch of different artists. I don't really work with text too much. And so working with artists that like focus on words or poetry. Got a few collaborations in the mix. I'm working with Olivia Steele, who does neon lights.
Of course.
And then Atticus, who's like does the sort of poetry that you've probably seen the poetry like online. He's got a few million followers at least. And so those are two collaborations that I have in the works, and a reoccurring one. We did it, I think, last year, and they went so well, and so we're doing it again, which is nice. And so that's always just a nice thing too. Artists like working with other artists. So yeah,
that's we'll have to get you to throw some paint on some big silver balls.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I love different canvases and yeah, some spheres could be cool too. Yeah, for sure.
So this is a question that I always ask, which goes on the cost side of the business. I'm gonna guess what it is, But what do you spend most of your money on?
Definitely materials.
And then my follow-up question is, how ridiculous is your paint budget? And have you found a paint sponsor yet?
Good question. I'm fortunate that I have a partnership with a paint brand in here in Canada.
So that's so smart.
Yeah. So I definitely do have a sort of, I guess, a discount. I do a certain amount of social media awareness for them, and that gives me store credit, which is great. So that's with TriArt, and they've been fantastic. And they're like, I love that they're Canadian, and I love their colors. And so that's been an amazing partnership that I've had for years. I also have a similar agreement with the canvas maker that I have, their faux Cadres Canal, and they are here in Montreal. And so I got my canvases, and then there's another art store, Desairs. I was there, I guess they're, what was it? They're, I don't know, they're not their representative, but there is some word for it. But I was there.
You're a brand ambassador?
Yeah, brand ambassador. Sure, that's the one. For a while with them, and so I had some credit that way. So I've been able to offset the costs, but at the end of the day, I'm still absorbing all of the canvas and material costs and studio costs. And
how many gallons of paint do you do a week?
It depends on how crazy I'm getting with the colors, but some of my paintings, one painting itself will take 5 to 10 gallons of paint.
Oh my God.
And those are the large scale ones. If I'm working large, I could be going through with the trapeze work, and they don't all work out. You got to multiple attempts. And
what percentage don't work out? That's a great question. I hadn't even thought of that. What percentage are a fucking total abomination?
I share most of my failures. And so you'll see there's...
And what qualifies a failure?
When I dump paint over top of it and basically start from scratch again.
Okay. It just, is that because you don't think it looks right? Or is that because like it just does something weird chemically and it just turns gray?
Maybe a combination of both. But I'm looking for... I've done, at this point, over 1,000 paintings. Probably...
Have to.
Probably more.
Way more than that. Know. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But listed on my website, there's over 1,000. A lot of them have sold. The vast majority are sold. But doing that amount of work, you're still looking for inspiration. And sometimes we talked about inspiration before. Sometimes it doesn't show up. And whether that's in your approach, maybe I'm falling into old patterns, same neural pathways, and I'm grabbing the same colors, doing the same things. And what do they say? Madness is when you have the same thing over again, expecting different results. And so sometimes I do fall into that sort of madness, but I work through it. I'll paint over it and over it. And sometimes, and that's an honesty that I just share with people. Sometimes I'm not feeling it, but maybe going through that process of being destruction comes creation, and a phoenix is born through the ashes or whatever. But in terms of paint budget, I would say I don't know. I don't know if I spend $100,000 a year. It's definitely thousands and thousands.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's the advantage and disadvantage of being prolific.
When I sell art, what do? I'm a pretty humble guy in my own respect. So I just buy more paint. That's just it. I can paint more. Great. That's the formula.
So I limit these things to an hour. We've already blown through the hour. I still have 100 questions. I might have to have you back for like round two at some point, because I don't feel like I've even scratched the surface in some respects. But as we're coming to the end of this, I always ask 3 questions that I'm always curious about from an artist. And one is, they're back and forth to each other. What, as an artist, do you think your biggest mistake was? And that's followed by, what do you think your greatest achievement was? Those go in a pair, and then there's one more.
Okay. Wow. Sean, biggest mistake. Huh.
Yeah. I've had so many, it's hard to find the best one. I think mine change from interview to interview.
Yeah. I'm all about positivity. So I'm going to answer the first one, the second question first. What was it? The best thing that ever happened?
Your greatest achievement, best thing that ever happened in your
life. I think it's very simple concept, but I think it's very profound. It's believe in yourself. And it's something that's not something, it's not a one and done thing. If you believe in yourself in a moment, you have to renew that contract with yourself, that whatever, your soul contract. And that's something that you have to do every day. And maybe other people are different. Maybe they just decide one day and they're good to go. But for me, my emotions go up and down. Sometimes I'm my worst like critic and stuff like that. And the fact that I've been resilient enough to just like, continue to believe in myself and be an advocate for just positivity and creating art and color day in and day out. And I think that is more profound than any of the other. Yeah, there's these things I've worked with like brands, and I've had good years, or I've made like epic works, or I've had these feats of maybe it's a celebrity that I've had my work in their place, or whatever the case may be. There's these sort of things that I could say are success, people that would attribute success to those things. But I think the most ultimate success is self-mastery. And I think that's something that I'm still working towards. And yeah, so just believing in myself is something I did to start, and it's something I would continue to do. And I'm just proud of myself for doing that.
Nice.
Yeah.
But by the way, self-doubt is real, and fucking believing in yourself and showing up every day, especially in art, especially publicly the way you do, it ain't easy, man.
No, it's not. It's not. And being, feeling like you're constantly in the public eye is a thing as well. I'm not like a celebrity, a huge celebrity, but in my own little way, I do have a responsibility to uphold myself to a greater standard, because there's this whole thing, which is I've created this brand, which is, it's not really me. I'm just this guy, but I created this brand, the Callan Shaw brand, which is the ideals and the things are things that I believe in, but they're greater than me. I can't make the world more colorful place, like, but maybe this idea can. And I believe that creativity is a group project. By myself doing it, I hope that it inspires others. And it's just, and maybe the world can be a more colorful place because I'm just encouraging others and they can just do it as well. And all of us together. And more colorful, what do I mean by that? That more colorful is, that's a big concept. We'll get into that in part two. But yeah, that was my positive thing about believing in yourself. The negative thing, like worst thing that ever, just your biggest mistake, man. I guess this one's double-sided, and I guess it kind of, the reason why you have your question structured like this is because they might be related, but it's like the best thing about my brand is I never went down the gallery sort of path, and I really just cut myself off from that as a potential because I went so hard on the self-representation and social media. It wasn't like that before. I don't want to toot my own horn, but I think there's a lot of artists now that are a lot more self-sufficient selling their stuff via social
1,000%.
Media. And I've been doing it for a while now, and that wasn't a thing before. You didn't put your artwork, it was the old model of you have to talk to the gallery sales director to request a price list to, and they audit you. Are they a client that they want to like share the collection of that artwork with? And it's this whole sort of system, which is, I don't want to bash that system and scenario. I've added this to my repertoire, and it's been added in the greater scheme of the art market in general, is now this is a thing that people do now. And so I guess if I really wanted to be truly a fixture in the art world in a big way, I would have had to play that game. And at some point I made a decision that I wasn't, and I will never, maybe long-term, maybe talk to me in another 10 years, maybe another 20 years, and maybe I do get somehow accepted into that, to that status of being like one of the greats, but in a way I've let that go because I know that in order to do that, you need to play the gallery museum sort of exclusivity game. And I just didn't do that. And I'm direct to market, and it's shaped me to who I am. And I've also been able to connect with a lot of my clients and make my artwork more accessible. And really, it's been an amazing journey. So I don't regret that, but I definitely think that it was a change in course, and it did have a definite cost for sure.
Once again, we live in different times, and what you've done is amazing. You have 5.5 million followers, right? It just goes to the power of what you're doing. So I think it's super impressive, and that the vestige of that system still exists, but you don't need it. And you can function more than well enough without it. I think that's a testament to now and the future. And it's impressed me. That's why we're here talking, because I love seeing this shit. So the last question I always ask is, what advice do you give to other artists? Any tips or tricks or a thing you would tell other artists that are coming up?
Yeah.
Do this, don't do this. You've said it throughout this whole interview, so it's almost repetitive at this point.
Yeah. Surround yourself with good people. There could be negativity out there online. Don't let it affect you. Just sort of follow your heart and keep making the work that you're excited about. Do all the stuff in terms of documenting your work and your process and just media, and do a good job capturing everything that you're doing process-wise, the final results. Get that stuff on your website. Your website is great, but also your social medias are free, and they are unprecedented opportunity for exposure. And so really take that seriously. Even if you are an artist that has gallery representation or an agent or a manager that's taking care of you and you have clients and stuff like that, a huge opportunity to be found just by taking advantage of these platforms. sort of case in point of that. I've doubled down on those. And so I just say, take that stuff seriously. I took it. TikTok seriously when everyone didn't, and now people are thinking, like, yeah, really, yes. And just be gentle on yourself too. Everyone's at their own pace. Comparison is the quickest way to unhappiness. So don't compare yourself. Just believe in yourself and do amazing.
I love it. That has been a great interview, and hopefully it will be part one because, like I said, I have 8 billion more questions. Kaylin, thank you so much. You clearly have had the balls to make art, sell experience, sell social. I love it all. Thank you so much for joining. Once again, everyone, you can find his work at Kaylin Schaub on all the platforms, on all the socials, on all the YouTubes, on all the internets. Thank you again, and talk soon.
Thanks so much, Sean. It's a pleasure speaking with you. Peace out.